Welcome to week four of section. It's a beautiful day out here in New Haven, so I really thank the sparse scattering of kids that joined me for section today. Thank you. So quickly, just before we start, the agenda for today, we are going to go over a few brief announcements. We have a really wacky schedule coming up in like the next 2 weeks or so, so we're going to go over that. Secondly, I know everyone's favorite topic. I'm sure this like melted your mind during lecture. Don't worry. I still kind of don't get it. It's fine. That was a joke. I actually do get it. But I will make sure that you guys get it too. So we're going to spend like a really, really good amount of time talking about pointers today. As you can see, candy stock is huge today. We're really going to keep that. Yeah, that's right. Keep taking candy. Here, I'm going to pass them around right now. Okay. No worries. We're going to really like try to keep people's blood sugar up because, you know, that brain is going to burn some oxygen today. Because pointers are really, really hard. Then we're going to talk about memory management, which kind of is like in the same realm. And we're going to move on to redirection and file I/O, which are just like syntax nice things that we should talk about. And then lastly, I'm going to once again try to leave like 10, 15 minutes for PSET 4. That's due in like a few days. So we're going to really kind of give you some helpful hints for how to get started on that. Cool. OK, so some announcements for this upcoming week. Grading. I don't actually know at this point how many of you guys are actually in my section. You okay there? Okay. But for those of you who are in my section, just a couple comments on grading. First, really good job of commenting. Those of you who don't comment, you know who you are because you probably got some style points dinged this week. Just make sure that in all of your programs, add a couple comments. Really, style is like really easy to get correct points as a scope. So for us, just make sure that you're kind of adding a brief description in all your programs about what like you're doing. Secondly, this is like a huge issue for a lot of the TAs this past week. So make sure you're uploading to the correct folder with correctly named programs. And the reason why we ask for this is because we, in the course of grading, actually run a script on your code that downloads automatically all of your PSETs, runs correctness tests on all of them, and then uploads your scores directly into the gradebook. However, at any point, if you named your program incorrectly, it screws up the entire program for everyone. And so like legitimately, this beautiful script that we've written that does all of this for us completely just crashes if you don't have your like program named correctly. So just upload to the correct folder, have them named correctly, and then life is good. I get your PSETs back to you guys earlier because I get to grade them quickly. Yeah. Okay, and also we're gonna talk about Yale has a really, really wacky schedule in these next 2 weeks. So those of you guys at Harvard, this does not apply. But for us lovely kids at Yale, we have something called fall break. Sorry, Harvard, where we have 5 days off of school. And while this is lovely, it kind of messes up our like PSET rhythm because PSETs are due Thursday, Fridays. And so if we're not here Thursday, Fridays, we can't have work for you guys due on Thursday, Fridays. So what we're going to do is we're like 99% sure this is what's happening. There may be some change, but I think it's like settled. Is we're going to have this week as normal. So we have our section on Tuesdays, followed by office hours throughout the rest of the week, and then PSET 4 is due on Friday. Then, as you guys all know, as I reminded you guys last week, we have our Quiz Zero coming up on Wednesday. And so being a student myself, I know that very few of you guys will actually be working on PSET 5 the 2 days before like your quiz. So what we're gonna probably end up doing is that Monday night, we're going to actually from 5:30 to 7 have like a brief review session on just like topics covered. Unclear if it's like a review session or a Q&A. It'll be some sort of review forum in which we'll cover some topics relevant for you guys. And then Monday and Tuesday nights of that week from 8 to 11, we're going to have office hours. Those office hours will most likely be more of just come in, ask TAs your questions regarding any concepts you're confused about, and they'll kind of go over with you and review concepts for the quiz. Quiz Zero, if you're in the Monday-Wednesday section, will be Wednesdays during class, on Wednesday during class. And then if you're in the Tuesday-Thursday section, will be also during class on Thursday. You can't really like choose which one you go to. If you're on Monday and Wednesday, you have to go to Wednesday. If you're on Tuesday, Thursday, you have to go to Thursday. But then that night, us lovely staff will have a giant quiz grading party in which we'll get your scores back to you that night. At what time? Unclear. Who knows? But it will be back to you within 24 hours so that you guys hopefully have some feedback by Friday. And then we have a really wacky week. So PSET 5 is like one of the hardest PSETs of the year. Sorry, guys. what we're going to try to do is we're going to have some extra support that weekend because, as you guys can see, the PCT is due before fall break. We don't have support, you know, for you guys during fall break. And so we really kind of want to phrase this as like, let's get this over with. Let's work really, really hard this next 2 weeks, get this quiz and these two PSETs done with, and then you guys can have a nice relaxing 7 days without thinking about CS. So in order for that to happen, we are probably going to move my section to Sunday afternoons. It will be filmed, so no worries if you can't come, but the online filming will be there and accessible so that you guys have like Sunday, Monday, Tuesdays to work all on PSET 5. And then it's fall break, and then no CS, and then we come back and it's back in the grind. But it's going to be a lovely week for fall break. And we really want to make it as stress-free for everyone as possible, which is why we moved the PSET to be due before fall break rather than after. Because I kind of feel like it defeats the purpose of having the deadline after fall break if there's no support anyways during fall break. So it's rather, I think we'd rather focus on it now. Does anyone have questions about that schedule? Anything confusing? Yeah.
Do we still have a lecture on the 21st?
Yeah, so on the 21st, there is going to be a lecture that is live from Harvard. I don't know if David is filming it or if he's actually lecturing, but it's going to be available and online for you guys to access. So just make sure you like carve an hour out somewhere in fall break so you guys can kind of catch up on that lecture. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I got here like a
no worries. Here, take some candy.
Not tomorrow, but the Wednesday after that, we have a quiz.
Correct.
What's the format of the quiz?
Oh, so we'll send out an email that covers all of that more in depth. But essentially, it just covers basic topics already covered in the first half of the semester. We'll have review sessions and question and answers, so no worries about that. But we'll be going over that too.
Is it gonna be like, we bring our computers and like code there?
No, it's going to be you guys writing and answering questions by hand. So we'll give out practices and stuff, so you guys may want to like perhaps go back and rewrite like Mario by hand, just to make sure you guys have an idea of how to like do that. Because sometimes when you write by hand, you like forget semicolons and stuff, and that's really bad. So.
Would that be penalized, like forgetting a semicolon when you're?
So yes and no. We'll talk more in depth regarding how the quiz layout is and how we're gonna grade. But essentially, just know that the general format is gonna be you guys either interpreting code, answering like basic questions. If I asked you like, what is a library? You guys should know what a library does and write that down. Or I may say, write a program that like prints hello world to the screen. You guys will write like, you know, int main void like printf hello world, semicolon. Yeah. No, we won't. Yeah, write the entirety of the game of 15 in 20 minutes. Go. No, it won't be that. No.
That is for Wednesday, and during that week we also have the hardest problem set.
No, so the problem set is due the day before fall break. The schedule, an email is actually sent out like 20 minutes ago regarding all of this, so you guys just check your emails to be there. Yeah, no worries. Cool. Any general questions regarding announcements, grading, quizzes before we dive right into pointers, which will consume the majority of our section time today? Cool. All right, so did you guys all watch this lovely, I don't know what they call it, the thing where like the claymation like blew itself up because it didn't use a pointer correctly? Well, your program is going to probably blow itself up if you don't use pointers correctly as well, so we're going to make sure that doesn't happen. Today we're going to do some pointer fun. I'm going to go over things as smoothly as I think as possible in a small time frame, but there's just so much to cover that I really want you guys, if you don't understand something, to not just let me keep going, because if you don't understand something, you're probably not going to understand anything I say after that. So please stop me and ask a question, because it all kind of like snowballs together. Like pointers lead into memory, lead into like other things. And so if you don't understand pointers, like stop me and then we will figure it out and life will be fine. Cool. So how many of you guys, like in lecture, when David mentioned pointers, like your brains kind of turn into jello? Yeah, good. we're going to try to de-jello like your brains today. We're going to really systematically go through what exactly a pointer is, what it does, and how we use them. So All pointers, you know, so like normally the variables we've been using in coding, like variables such as integers or strings or floats, they're all essentially a value assigned to them as well as an address pointing to that value. So I'm going to draw this right now. Okay, we have almost no chat, but that's okay. So for example, normally, the way that we've been using variables is we create the name of the variable of type int, let's just say. So here we've got int x, and we're initializing that int to 50. So here in this block of memory on our computers, we've stored a number 50. So where pointers come into play is that your computer itself, like here, physically in the hard drive in the RAM of my computer, it only has a finite amount of memory. Like you can't just keep storing things on top of things on top of things and have them all. So the way that we dynamically allot memory to be able to store what we want and access it is by having pointers. So like imagine in your memory space, right? Like this is the RAM of your computer. You have these little bits or blocks or bytes of memory in which like these are just little blocks that have been allocated out on the hard drive or RAM of your computer. And within each of those blocks, you can store different things. So for example, one array in this example here is one byte, which is consisting of 8 bits. The number changes depending on the operating system of your computer. For example, like how many of you heard of like 32-bit versus 64-bit operating systems exactly? So all that's saying is that the memory, that the way that your computer manages the memory is different, which is why it's really important to understand why memory itself functions rather than kind of pay attention to the numbers. So we don't really care like how large this array is. We just need to care about like how large do we need an int to be? How large do we need like a string to be? How large is like a pointer? Okay, so it's gonna be a lot of like heavy, dense information. I'm gonna give you guys like a couple of like comic relief moments here. You guys should all be able to understand this now because we know that pointers are addresses and those are different from variables. Okay, cool. CS jokes are the best, yeah? Okay, so the way that we go about creating a pointer is a very specific sort of syntax. As with like creating any type of variable, it's gonna be a specific syntax we use to create it. So when declaring any pointer, a pointer is just essentially, I think the important part of pointers is that whereas a variable has both a value and an address, a pointer is an address, like its value is an address. So it's an address stored at a different address, if that makes any sense. We'll go over this more in detail, but that's like the generic form of why, of like how a printer is stored. So the way that you create a pointer is by doing whatever type of data that the pointer is going to be referencing, and then with the chart, with the star, and then the name of your pointer. So here, if we wanted to create a pointer that pointed towards an integer, and we wanted the name of the pointer to be x, we would do int star x. Yeah?
And so if the following line you do int x, will the int star x indicate the location of the x you're declaring afterwards?
Really good question. We'll go over this in like a couple slides later. Yeah. And then same thing with char and same thing with floats. Just know that at this point, we've created a pointer. We haven't actually set it to equal anything yet. We haven't actually referenced it. It's the same thing like here, when you create like a variable, you've created the name of the variable, you haven't actually set a value to it. Same thing here. Okay, so how do we set values to pointers? It's by referencing and dereferencing. So the way that we can reference a variable or a pointer, in essence, we return the address in memory of which a variable is stored. So if I had a pointer, I'll draw this once we get to the next slide. But just know that essentially the ampersand and the variable, all that does is tell you the address of where something is stored. And dereferencing is the opposite of that, which is just like the star. The star just gives you the actual data stored at that address. So one gives you the address stored at an address. The other gives you the actual like value stored at the address. So the two of them give you different things. Once again, slides are all online, so no worries if you guys can't copy this down in time. So let's take a look at this example here. So we've got like a giant memory array here, right? Where we just have blocks of memory or bytes of memory in which we can store different things. Let's just say these are the address points in memory. So like anytime you see the 0x, all that is telling you is that that's a hexadecimal digit. As you guys all know, like numbers can be based in different bases. Base 10 is how we typically interpret numbers. There's also base 2, which is binary. And in this case, hexadecimal is base 16. It's just a different way of saying from like 0 to 10, or 0 to 9, and then also A, B, C, D, E, F. Also references like different numbers. David went over this in lecture briefly. If you guys are confused, just Google it. It's like there's really easy ways to learn what a hexadecimal digit is. All that's really relevant right now is for you guys to know that a hexadecimal digit in C tells you, that typically tells you that it's a pointer, or that's like an address. So in this example here, int x equals 5. We're creating a variable of type integer, and we're initializing it to 5. So here on our memory board, we can see that x is at the address of 0x0, and the value that you've stored inside of it is 5. That should make sense to everyone, right? OK. And then what we've done in the second line of code is that we've created a pointer of type int, as that's what the int star pointer is doing. And that equals that the ampersand x is giving you the address of something. So the address of x in this example is 0x0. And so that address is being stored in that pointer. Does that make sense to everybody? So think of pointers like here at Yale, we have a P.O. box system, right, where every student has like a mailing address where you can go into the basement of LDub and you can just go and grab whatever you need from that address. The same thing is happening here in a computer. You have these memory bytes that you can store information into, but in order to know which pieces of information match up of what you're trying to find and where, you need a pointer that tells you how to go there. So for example, for me, my P.O. box, I have a specific 5-digit number. That's my address. So I can physically go to memory, I can look at the address, I can go to that P.O. box and access the data inside. Does that make sense to everybody? Like your computer is essentially doing the exact same thing. So all a pointer is doing is that it's just creating a memory, and its memory data is actually the address of something else. Then you can go and find that. Everyone good? Everyone good with me so far? OK, cool. All right, so almost the same thing as before. So we have first a variable called x, in which case I'm going to change this value to 5. Let's just say the address of this in memory is 0x000. Great. So then on our second line of code, we're going to create a pointer called PTR pointer. And the address of that, let's just say that's like 0x01 in memory. And we actually want to store the ampersand x gives you the address of what x was. And the address of x was 0x00. So this pointer now actually has the address stored as its value of what x was. Everyone with me so far? Cool. And then the way that we would copy that is if we would declare and initialize another block of memory of type int, right? This would be an int. It would be called copy. And you're going to get, so the star pointer gives you the actual data from that address. The ampersand gives you the address. The star gives you the data. So the data at pointer, this pointer is pointing to 5. And so this function here, the star pointer, goes, gets whatever is in this block and stores it here. Everyone clear on how that happened? So the two operators right there, the ampersand and the star, just do different things when used on pointers. One gets you the address, one gets you the actual value. So make sure when you guys are coding that you don't confuse the two, because they're vastly different. Like here, we have a nice example of like a 0x, like 0, 1. That's like a really nice small number to remember. In your actual computer, you're gonna have like a giant ass number that is something that's not nice and not pleasant. It's gonna be some like garbage value. And so it's gonna really, really mess up your programs. It's very important right now that we have the fundamentals down for why is it, like what is physically happening when you're running those blocks of code. Everyone, yeah.
So int x equals int copy.
No, because in this case, like int x, the value of x equals 5, right? Mm-hmm. And then int copy equals 5. So if you were to equate them to each other, because they're integers, yes, they would evaluate to true. But if there were strings in memory, like the one that David did during example, that's different because they're referencing the addresses of places in memory and they would equate to false. So here it would be true because you're directly comparing values, integers, but in the others you're referencing points because a string is an array, and we'll talk about this later, but array is essentially just like a pointer to a bunch of chars in memory. So those are a bit different. But in this case, yes, you could do that. Yeah, so that's just, I didn't fill in a value, but it's just like some random other garbage value that we don't care about. Because once you start programming, you realize that like we don't actually really care what the actual addresses are. We just need to know what's at the addresses. Yeah.
The star next to int on the second line, that's different than the dereferencing and references are?
So the authors of C, whoever decided to write the language of C, was not very smart. They were not very smart in trying to figure out why we should do this. If it was me, I would definitely use two different characters, but they decided to use the same one. So the star after like an int, that tells the computer that you're about to create a pointer. But if you're trying to dereference something, in other words, go to the address and pull the data from somewhere, the star is used differently. So you guys just be careful about not messing up the two uses. Cool. Yeah. Totally fine.
Like in the left-hand side of that slide, we do a thing that we know. We declare an integer x and set it equal to 5.
Yeah, here.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then we have an int star thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that says that, okay, kind of like we declared an integer, now we're declaring a pointer.
Correctly,
right?
Correct.
And the pointer is ptr.
Yeah, the name of the pointer is ptr,
right.
Pointer. Yeah.
And then it equals and x, which just tells C that it wants to access the value at integer x. The value that integer x was
assigned. Be careful because ampersand x actually tells you the computer that you want to pull the address of what x is. Right. So ampersand gives you the address, star gives you the value.
Okay, so we want the address. Let's say x was at...
we actually know what x is, right? Because we know that x was like... I'm making this up, but like let's just say arbitrarily it was like 0x00, right? So we know the address is 0x00, and so when we go in ampersand x, we know that that should evaluate to 0x00,
okay.
Which is why we stored that as the value of our pointer.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
And copy, it goes to dereference ptr, which
right.
is a pointer that we declare that tells us the address of the integer x.
Yeah.
And in this one case, star ptr is equal to the value of x, which equals 5.
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that is a simpler way to get that? Or is that the only way?
So right now, it doesn't seem very logical for us to spend all of this time doing this super complicated thing when all we've done is just create two integers with the value of 5, right? Doesn't make sense. But once we'll go over memory allocation, and we'll go over why this may be handy and useful later on. Trust me when I say we don't just create these arbitrary functions for you guys to learn because we're trying to mess with you. Like, there's actually uses for all of these things, and we will talk about them.
Awesome.
Yeah, good question. It's not. It really isn't. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Before I move on, is everyone clear? I know Taylor got in like a bit late. That's okay. It's online. You'll watch the first 20 minutes, and it'll be all good. Okay. Cool. All right, so this is essentially like kind of a similar thing that we just did. It's just in like a graphical form. If you were to like track what just happened, int x equals 5. All we've done at this point is create a variable named x of type int. We're going to store the value of 5 inside of it. There's no pointer because we haven't actually created a pointer yet, right? And then in the next line, int star pointer, that's where we're actually physically creating the pointer, and we're setting that equal to, we're referencing the pointer to ampersand x, which is wherever in memory this happened to be. I didn't actually bother making up a value this time, but in this case, that pointer would be equal to that. And then down there, the star pointer is the dereferencing. That's where we're pulling the information. So that value at x is actually going to be equal to 35. So that at this point, we've essentially just reinitialized x to 35 without actually touching x. Just through the pointer that was pointing to x, we can actually change what x was. I'm going to draw this out as well. So here, we've created some random address here. Like, I don't know, let's just say 0x00 again. Let's just say that's the address, and we've created an integer named x, and the value we've assigned to it is 5. In the second line, int pointer, so now we've got this second thing here called a pointer. And we're gonna, let's just say it's like some other random memory address. So we're gonna set this equal to whatever that was. So, and this pointer is going to point towards the value of x. And then if we change the, if we do star pointer, that's going to the value of our pointer. In this case, it's gonna track this arrow over to this value of x, and it's gonna change it to 35. Effectively, we just changed x without touching x. Through just referencing pointers, we can go and change the value of x. Does that make sense? So in this way, we can actually like rename and rechange and reassign values to things that we didn't actually make ourselves. Does that make sense to everybody? Cool. Okay, so complex graphic here. Go line by line, essentially just do the exact same thing that I just did. So before I move on, I really want to just like make sure everyone's really clear on this. So up here, the code that we have is int a equals 3, b equals 4, c equals 5. So if we created three integers named a, b, and c that are equal to 3, 4, and 5. And then we're creating three pointers that point to each of those variables. And now we're going to go over like essentially what happens when you operate on them. So draw them out. Like, take a sheet of paper. I don't know if you guys all have paper, but those of you who don't, maybe borrow from those of you who do. Take sheets of paper and go line by line. And at every operation that you do, I want you guys to actually write out, like, what is A, B, and C at this point? And then what are the addresses? What are the pointers that point to A, B, and C at this point? And then hopefully, like, this will kind of step you guys through how to think about pointers. We're not going to go through all of them. Just maybe I'll give you guys, like, 3 minutes to get started on, like, the first few. So remember in operators, like on the first week, we talked about how if you do like plus equals, that just means A equals A plus C. In this case, so this is another way in which the star could be used. In addition to referencing and declaring pointers, remember that it also means multiplication. So in this case, it would just be A equals A times C. That's just a different way of writing that. Thank you. Ampersand means you're going to that, you're going to the place the pointer is pointing and pulling the address. So ampersand gives you the address, star gives you the actual value there. Yeah.
Are we building on line by line?
You're building on line by line. So go, just go one line at a time, and then you don't have to worry about finishing the whole thing. Let's try to get through maybe like 2-3 lines, and then we'll convene, finish this. Yeah. It's totally okay if you guys are lost. Like, this is a really hard concept. If you guys are worried that the class like goes like this, like David was saying, it doesn't. We're reaching like the conceptual peak of difficulty, and then it's going to be downward sloping. So you guys are almost there. We have lots of candy to get you guys through the hump. I think pretty much after fall break, we'll be over the hump and life will be fine again. So no worries at all. All right, I'll give you guys like 20 more seconds to wrap up, and then okay, all right, let's take a stab at this. As you guys give me answers, I'm just gonna type them in, and hopefully we can I? I actually can't type it in. I'll draw it on the board. Okay. So here in this first line, we have A equals B star C. Also, Elliot brought up a really, really good point, because I forgot that in addition to the two ways we can use the star symbol, there's actually a third way, multiplication. And so just guys, like, don't get confused, because that is the first way of using a star. It's just telling the computer that I'm about to create a pointer. The second way, by doing star of your pointer, that tells the pointer that you want to access the data at that pointer. And then, of course, just simple multiplication between two numbers that tells you that I want to multiply the two. So there's like a lot of ways we can use the star symbol. Don't get confused. Just make sure that you guys like understand exactly what all three of them are doing. So in this first line, A equals B times C. So let's go through, like, what is A? What is B? What is C? And what is the pointer of A, the pointer to B, and the pointer to C? What are those all equaling? Okay, so we start off with A equals 3, B equals 4, and C equals 5, right? So after that first line, can somebody tell me what A is? Yeah, feel free to just like shout out answers. 20. Good. What's B?
4.
What's C? 5. Yay. All right, good. What are P, A, B, P, B, and P, C? Yeah, so kind of a trick question, but not really, because here I drew out like actual memories, but because, like, for an example, we don't actually know what those numbers are, we can just say ampersand. I don't even know if I can draw an ampersand. It's like, how do you do it? It's like,
I'm drawing an eight.
Like an eight. Like that. Okay.
Bingo.
So, killing it. Okay. So, ampersand A, you can just do that, because we don't actually like care what the value of that is, and it's some like long ass value anyways. We're just gonna say ampersand A. Then what's PB? Yeah. Cool. All right, easy first line. We got this. Pointers are easy. It's okay. Second line. And so star equals is the same thing as saying A equals A times C. It's just an easier way of writing. So we're not like trying to like make a pointer or anything here. So, whew, done with the first line. What is A on the second line after you do A equals A times C? 100. It's 100. Good. How about B? How about C? And how about pointers? Are they the same, right? Okay. Now, third line. A little trickier. B equals star PA. Can someone tell me first what does star PA equal?
Yeah, it's like the value that's stored at A.
Exactly. And what is the value that's stored at A?
100.
Okay. So, what would A be after executing that line of code? Okay. What about B?
100.
Yeah. And then everything else is pretty much unchanged, right? Because we didn't touch it. Cool. Fourth line, slightly more complex. So PC, once again, PC is the pointer that pointed to C, equals PA. Okay. What is A? What is B? What is C? What's PA? PB. And tricky, what is PC now? Yay! Woohoo! Alright. You guys see, like this is alright. It's not too bad. We have more candy if it's not alright, but I think it's alright. Okay. And we're gonna go over just one more before we hit the harder ones. The answers I have up here. Essentially know that like this is just like math at this point. You know, when you have simple equations like A plus B, A times C. Like, that's easy to do, and when you start expanding upon it, just go order of operations, same thing as before. Keep track of if your star is before something, that tells you the value. If you have an and before something, that tells you the address, and you can assign either pointers or that value. So let's go over this last one real quick. Not this last one, sorry. Actually, you guys can pick. Which one do you guys want to go over out of the remaining three that we have? I don't think we can just do that because we can't just jump to the last line. So, okay, you guys don't have a choice. It's just the third to last one. Star PC equals B times C.
Star PB.
Sorry?
Star PB.
Star PB. Oh, my bad. Star PB equals B times C. All right, I'm going to give you guys like 10 seconds. Just quickly think. This is what we have so far. What happens after we execute that fifth line right there? Okay, what is A? 100. What is B now?
500.
Good. Does somebody want to explain to me why this is 500? I don't feel like we actually ever touched B. How did we manage to change the value of B without touching B? Yeah.
Because star PB means the value at PB.
Exactly.
Which is B.
Exactly. So here in our diagram, right, our pointer PB is actually pointing to this right here, which is the actual physical B. And so if you go and you do star PB, that's following your arrow of your pointer and physically changing the value of B. So that's why we have B changed to 500 without actually touching B. And then everything else remains the same because we didn't touch that. That's an A. Cool. And then
I just have a question.
Yeah.
There's no longer ampersand C, mm-hmm. Does that mean ampersand A redirect to the same thing now?
Yeah. So.
So the arrow kind of just like moves.
Yeah.
And now
so essentially when we dereference C on, I forget, like what was that, like the third line? Fourth line. All we did was essentially change this arrow and have it pointed towards A instead.
So we can't access C anymore.
If you had this exact number, you could access it. But no, we don't have a pointer pointing towards C anymore. I think if you wanted to reaccess it, you would create another pointer that repointed to C or dereference this and point it back.
Okay.
So no, as of right now, the three pointers, none of them point to C. Yeah. Everyone good? Okay, so answers are online. Feel free to, after section, go over the last two and test yourselves. Same concepts, just a little bit trickier. Just follow through the logic of why things are different things. And hint, pointers are a topic that we love to cover on quizzes because they're conceptually very challenging. So I would suggest that you guys all review this chart or slash similar concepts to this before your quiz next week. Yeah.
The final line, why is it like 50,000?
50,000? I would need to follow it back down. But somewhere, I think the line before, you created a giant C value, right? C equals this like giant thing, which is 100 times 500. No. 100 times 100. Yes, 100 times 100, which is 100, 10,000, which is 10,000. And so back down there, you're multiplying B and C. So the pointer that points to B, which is the value of 500 times A. Maybe that's wrong.
No, no, it's not. Because the pointer at C is now pointing at A.
Yeah, he's right.
It's N is the value at, like, A equals A times the value at C.
Yeah, can you say that a bit louder so everyone can hear you?
So pointer at C now points to the pointer of A used to point to and still does, but they point to the same thing, which is the, like, A. Right, the value A, however, it's been newly defined. And at the beginning of that, you're saying A, which was previously 100 times the value at B, which is 500. And so that's however much that is, 50,000. Then you're reassigning that to what the memory space that C is the pointer at C is pointing to, which is A. So you're redefining A to be 50,000.
Shake a teach section for me. Next time, it's all yours. Here's more candy for that. You deserve candy for that.
I almost got that.
That's all right. Yeah, but she was exactly right. So what you have to do is that I think we have to follow the fact that the pointers are now pointing to different values. So the pointer of C repointed to A, and so that shifted all of our numbers, and that's why when you access the value stored there, it's different. Does that make sense? Okay, cool. Everyone good before I move on?
When you're like going down the rows in the left column,
mm-hmm.
Does the first row affect the second row and then the second, like it's all just?
Yeah, so imagine it's like code. Where I just typed in A equals B times C, like A star equals C. And just imagine that I've just ran this code and I didn't print out what all of these things were. If I were just to print the first thing at the top, it would be here. If after I ran all of those lines of code, what these values should be at the end are that. So I've actually written a program here. I haven't like done all of the multiplication, but just imagine. So here I just have a program called pointers. I'm gonna zoom in if you guys, okay. So I've created variables A, B, and C. I've set them equal to 3, 4, and 5. And then I've created their corresponding pointers. And then here, I'm just going to print out what that is. So let me run that. Do you guys see how A, B, and C are those values, but their pointers are this giant garbage value that we don't care about? So if I were to actually like plug in all of the multiplication and then reprint all of this, it would execute out to what that is at the bottom. So if you guys want to play around with it actually physically coding, you guys can just plug all of those in, the code will be online, and then your values should print to that afterwards. And then you'll see how the pointer addresses have actually reassigned. So you'll see how like the address of C actually becomes to equal whatever the address of A was, and they'll match whatever that large number is. Good question, yeah. Everyone, all right, one last call for questions. Okay. All right, so prepare to have your mind blown a slightly bit more. Arrays are actually just pointers, that's all they are. And remember, what are strings? They're also arrays. So what are strings really? They're like pointers to the beginning of a char of more chars. So it's just like concepts that start to build on top of each other. So that's why, remember in lecture, David, when he had that comparison of int, string mom is something and then another string mom, and you try to equate the two to each other, they give you different values. It's because strings themselves aren't values. All they are memory addresses of like, they're arrays of chars, and arrays are just pointers. So in essence, when David was comparing like, is it okay if I erase all of this? It was. So in lecture, when David had like mom equals mom, to us, that seems to be the same thing, right? But in the computer underneath the hood, what is actually happening is that this string, all that is an array with an ampersand, or sorry, with a null terminator at the end. Right, backslash zero, wrong backslash. So all they were, all these two strings were, are array of size fours with the letters of mom and mom. But what arrays really are just pointers to a specific place in memory that tells you to start your array. So in this case, like, all this was just some garbage value, some random pointer. And all this was some other garbage value, let's just say 0x, like 200. And so when you try to equal them two to each other, they evaluate to false because the addresses, the pointers that they were different. Whereas it's different if you're trying to compare actual integers, like if you wanted to compare like in the last example, like int a to b, they would evaluate to true, as Elliot said, because they were integers that were stored and you're evaluating just the values. Here, because strings are arrays, all arrays are pointers, that's why they aren't equal to each other. So, kind of confusing, that graphic, but let's just imagine, right? We've created an array of size 3 with indexed from 0 to 2. 0, 1, 2 with the values of 1, 2, and 3 stored in them. All the array really does, here, let's just say I'm creating a pointer to that array that's accessing the value at the first index of this array. So here it would be 0, right? Does everyone understand how that first line evaluated? Great. And so if we wanted to initialize the additional values after that, all we're doing is reassigning. So like 0, 1, 2, 1. So this pointer that was once pointing to here, all we're doing is moving it down. That's what the plus 1 is doing. And then we can put 2 there. If we wanted to put 3 in the one after, we would erase this pointer, put 3 in there. Does that make sense, everyone? Yeah, did you have a question? Okay.
So, like, in English, array equals 1 makes sense. Like, we're like, okay, the first thing, but things are, like, 0 index, so why is the array equals 0 to indicate the first spot?
Yeah. So, actually, what I'm doing here is that I'm not accessing the first index. All I was doing, so, first of all, tell me what does star array do? What does a star before a pointer do?
It
dereferences, which it means it goes and it actually gets the value, right? So in this case, you want to get the value here and set that to 1. Yeah? So I don't really care about the index of this. All I'm doing is just iterating down by moving my pointer down the array. And then eventually I have to stop it, right? And the way that I stop it is like when I hit, in the case of a string, a null terminator. Is that I know, if I hit a black, if I see backslash 0, I know I'm done with this. And I know that I can just stop iterating through. Really good question. And we'll really like go farther in depth in this next week because the pieces involve a lot of usage of pointers. But just know that right now, that's just a different way for the computer to write essentially what we've been doing. Like David said in lecture, the way that we access an array is just by doing array 0, right? Bracket 0, if we just wanted to access the first value. All the computer is doing is turning that into that and iterating itself. So we call it like syntactic sugar, which is a fancy way of saying like user-friendly ways of us knowing how to program, but the computer underneath, like what it's doing, it's actually just having a pointer that's adjusting. But the way that we write it, because it's easier for us to think about things in terms of boxes and how to move down boxes, is by having the bracket. Sorry, that was really, really poorly, but like, yeah.
So how would you compare two strings to see if they're equal to each other?
So David wrote this program in lecture, so I'm just gonna go over quickly and briefly. The way you would do that is that you would actually need to go and compare the addresses or the values obtained from the pointers. So remember, how do you obtain the value here? I don't care about the address here, how do I actually get the value of whatever's here?
Star.
Exactly. So you compare the star here versus the star here, are those equal? And then you go down. Are the star here and the star here is equal? Okay, they're equal. And you just keep going down until you've hit the end of both. And if all of them are equal, then you know your string is equal. Yeah. And C actually has a function written called string comp, which actually just does that for you, so you don't have to like write it yourself. Yeah.
So I think in lectures, when we do the compare, we don't really need a counter like I, right?
You don't, because we don't really care like how many boxes we've iterated through. All we care is that we're gonna keep going until I know to stop. And you know to stop when there's some sort of indication that like you're at a null terminator. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like in the case of comparing strings, like I don't really care how many letters are in, I need to compare if they're true or false, if they're equal to each other. I don't care how many letters are in each of them, right? I just care that this matches with this, and the one after matches, and the one after matches, all the way up until the end, right? Does that make sense? So I don't really care how many letters, I just care that all of the letters match. Yeah. Okay, can I move on from this? Great. We're running a little short on time, so I'm gonna just allow you guys to briefly look at this, run it into your IDE if you guys are curious, and you guys can see what this will be printing out. Okay, so something that we'll also touch on a bit is the idea of pointer arithmetic, which all it is rather than adjusting the values of what is stored at the address of your pointer, it's just actually like changing the address itself. So if you as the human wanted to adjust your pointer manually, the way you would do that is just do n times the size of the pointer, right? So an int, how many bytes in memory is an int? It's 4, right? So if I know I have an array of all ints and I want it to point to the one afterwards, I'd know I just have to move my pointer down 4 bytes, right? And so n times the size of the pointer, bytes, is however many bytes you're just gonna move your pointer down by. So, for example, if we have an array of ints, the first one, let's just say, is stored as like 0x00. You know the next one is gonna be at 0x04, because that's 4 bytes later. And the one after that is gonna be 0x08, and so on and so forth. Take a look. Like, all you're doing here is that you have a pointer, y, and you're adding that to your memory so that you can move down the blocks of memory allocated. Kind of a higher level concept you guys won't need to know for like this week, but that's all it's doing down there. Okay, another joke time. 2 strings walk into the bar. One says, I'd like a rum and Coke, garbage values. The other says, you'll have to excuse my friend, he's not null terminated. You guys get it? Sorry, this is how I like keep myself going when I prep for a section, is I insert a couple joke slides. Anyways. All right, so, okay, before I move on. So essentially we've covered all the conceptual issues related to pointers. And then we're gonna talk about like why that's important and how that fits into the idea of like memory management. But before I move on, does anyone have questions about just like pointer use? What's going on when you're like creating pointers? How are they referencing each other? How are they dereferencing? Any questions about that before I move on? Okay, great. All right, so this brings us into like this larger, higher level concept of memory management as a whole. So essentially, in your computer, there's 2 basic types of memory, or regions in which memory is stored. You have here what's called the heap, and you have down here what's called the stack. And we're gonna talk about the stack first, because it's like the more finagly one that you have to kind of like conceptually understand what's going on. So all the stack is, think of it as like a physical stack of memory, where you have a block of memory that's set aside for your program while it's running. And this is where essentially all of your local variables are stored. So this is just a zoomed in picture of that stack, of like the stack down there. I'm just zooming in a bit more. So essentially in a stack, you have a bunch of functions in your program, right? So let's just go back to like the week two example where we had our main function as well as a cube function where we tried to create a function that cubed, that took parameters as input, cubed them and returned them back to main. So the way that that's stored in memory is that you have your main function here at the bottom. And with each additional function that you call and add on top of that, the memory just stacks on top. Think of it as like a physical stack. And so you have all of your main variables, all of your main functions, everything that's going on here stored. And then when you call cube, it goes and it creates copies of all of those parameters, and it stores them above in a different place. And so why do we care? The reason we care is that we can't just like use the parameters here, like the variables here, and we change them, we expect them to also be changed here, right? The idea is that they're saved in different places in memory so that when you're accessing different functions, what you think is happening isn't actually happening because like the memory bits aren't interconnected. And so the question that's really important for us to kind of understand is, what if when we're running a program, the size of a function stack frame, so like physically, how much memory do we have to give it? Maybe it's like a giant function, so we have to give it that much memory. But if it's smaller, we just need it like a tiny little bit. So the idea is that when we're running a program, the size of that function is dependent upon how many variables and the type of variables that we want to give it. But what if the number of variables and their size is like, that's determined not by you, the coder, but is determined by like the actual user of your program. So like, if I wanted to create a function that took strings from the user, but I don't actually know how large those strings are, it's hard for me to like allot the specific amount of memory needed, right? Because if this function, if this user inputs like a giant string, it's gonna create an error of what's called like essentially stack overflow, where you go beyond the bounds of the memory that you have. And so then what do we do if we can't just create like this giant stack that can save everything? What do we do to solve that problem? So we are going to move on and talk about the second type of memory, and then we can talk about how we can use the two together to solve that question. So now we're going to move up to a different part of memory in our computer that's called the heap. So all the heap is a pool of available memory that can be allocated dynamically. So that can change while your program is running. And so a region of unused memory that can be allotted, with the function called malloc, or memory allocation. So essentially, when you're running a program, you can dynamically create memory from the heap and use that all down here. And so then all of your functions here can access the heap. And so malloc, this idea that David kind of quickly, briefly glossed over in lecture, is just a way for you to control your memory. Like when you're just, you know, creating stack functions, when you're just having your main function with your random functions, you think of them as like children that just like ran away when you're done with them, right? They're really bad children. Like you create them, you teach them something, and then when you want to access them again, they're not there because your memory just ran away. But malloc, or the heap, is a way of having better children where you can kind of create them, assign them values, use them, that sounded really bad, use them however you wanted, but then be able to control them and then free up memory whenever you need them. So then when you're done with your function, the children come back to you and you still have that data there. So the way that we malloc or create memory is by the function of void star malloc size and bytes. So that's just the prototype for why we do that. So an example is we create a pointer of type int, right? Int star pointer equals malloc size of int. So the reason why we do size of and not just like a number, because we all know that an int is 4 bytes, right? But an int is only 4 bytes on certain operating systems. The idea for us, you know, as programmers, is that we want to create code that can run on all computers, not just our simple computers. And so that's why we like to use size of and not just like the number 4. Does that make sense to everyone? So size of, all it is a C function or operator that tells you how many bytes of memory does a certain type of variable take up. So in this case, size of an int is 4 bytes, and malloc is going to free up 4 bytes in your heap. then you can then use in your main function to be able to store memory. Is everyone clear on that so far? Yeah.
I'm clear, but just to be over
clear. Okay, totally fine.
Size of is a thing that you can actually type, and it will actually do the thing that we
yes.
want it to. It's not some pseudocode thing.
No.
It's like a real
this
thing,
is real code.
We can use it, it's
yeah.
actual.
Yep.
Cool.
Size of comes with C.
That makes me a lot happier.
Yeah. So if you're, you know, like a lazy programmer, like I kind of am sometimes, I don't like memorizing what the size of an int is. I don't like memorizing what the size of a float is. Size of just tells you what it is, and that's a lot easier. Yeah. Cool. All right. So an important thing that you guys all want to keep in mind when you're using malloc is that you always have to check to see if it's null. So like I said, back to that picture of the heap, right? A heap is just this giant stack of memory that you've got. And you want to be able to take chunks of memory from it and use it, right? But what if you have no more memory in that heap? What if, like, I've already used all of it and I try to malloc more, that doesn't exist? Well, that's why you're going to get an error. You're going to seg fault, or you're going to have a segmentation fault where you try to access things that aren't there. And so the way we do that and the way that we prevent that is that we check to see if the pointer is null. So if I were to malloc something and I had no more memory, that would print an error because the pointer it returned to you is just null. And so the way we do this is just like great design, just memorize this, is that any time you try to malloc anything, you're going to need to check to see if it's null. Because whenever you try to obtain memory from the heap, you always have to make sure that you have memory. That's all it is. So pretty much those like three lines of code, memorize, every time you malloc, plop them in. You're going to need them. Because I guarantee you, we're going to test you in a case and your computer's going to like explode because you're going to try to access memory that's not there and things are going to crash and it's not going to be good. So just drill that into your brain. Malloc, null. Good. All right. So then this begets the question of what happens after we're done using that memory. Because the whole idea of having malloc was that like we have this heap that we can take memory from and then we can use it, right? And then what we have to remember is that after we're done with it, we can then free it. You know, let it go. We can let it go. Or else you're also going to leak memory and more bad things will happen. Essentially, whenever you're touching memory, bad things will happen if you don't do things correctly. So you have to check to see first if you have the memory available. And then after you're done, you want to free it and allow it, your operating system to take it back. So the way we do that is just that function, void free, and the pointer to that heap of memory. So the example is free pointer. It's pretty easy, simple, don't want to forget it. So check to see if it's null, free. Everyone good? Cool. Okay. So once again, code that you guys can kind of quickly take a glance at. I know it's a lot of new syntax, and it's all right if you're like, oh, what does that mean again? No worries. All this was meant to be is like displaying an action, like how all of these can be used, these things can be used together. Yeah. So that just put together like a bunch of the past slides we just went through into like one program. In a way that we can actually use. You could plop that into like your IDE, you can run it, and it would work.
Okay, so that's real.
That's real. Yeah. I try to make it so the fonts are different, so that like whenever I type real code, the font is like font code, and that like my note code is different, but I don't know if that like actually works.
No, I think
okay.
You know, sometimes in lecture I'll write a thing, and I'm like, that would be really cute if it was actually a useful thing,
yeah.
But then it's not a useful thing.
Yeah.
I think this is a useful thing.
Okay. Yeah, I'll pass that along. Like, David, kids are really sad when you write fake code. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
Here is not actually a pointer, it's a block of memory.
So are you talking about
yeah.
the first line or the one down here? Are you talking about this one here?
I mean, PTR is different thing.
Well, so up here, what I'm doing, actually, let's just go through here. So this kind of like ties in nicely all of the concepts. So here we have int star PTR. So int pointer, that's where we're actually creating a pointer that points to an integer. It's going to point to an integer, and we're going to malloc or give it enough memory allotted to store an integer, so 4 bytes in this case. And then if that equals null, equals null, we're going to print, oh, you have an error because you're out of memory, right? Otherwise, so returning one, that just tells your program you've got an error. And then if you do have that memory, it's going to store whatever get int gives you into the location and set it as the value of the pointer. So it's actually going to physically like erase this value and put whatever get int returns. And then you're going to print whatever they entered.
And that's going to be in the heap.
That's going to be in the heap.
And so that will be accessible.
Exactly. Nice. Yeah, I saw that. That's good.
So when we like free PTR at the final step, we are freeing the pointer or we're freeing the block of memory?
Yeah, so we're freeing the pointer. We're freeing the block of memory. So the only way we can even access the memory is by having the pointer, right? If you don't have the pointer, you're like, oh, I don't know where it is, right? So if you free it, you're essentially freeing that entire block. Then your computer knows, oh, there's nothing usable here. I can just like put garbage values back into it again. Do integers exist? Sorry, can you rephrase your question?
I mean, after you free the pointer, like the integer that you get, will that still exist?
No, it won't. Or at least like it'll exist in your memory before your computer like does whatever with it, but there's no way for you to get that because you free the pointer. You don't know where it is anymore. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna move on here. Okay, phew, so we're through like a lot of the conceptual difficulties of memory management, and we're just gonna essentially spend like 5-10 minutes going over like syntax things that will be usable and useful for you guys, but nothing too conceptually like out there. Okay, so we're completely changing gears here. Memory management difficult, pointers difficult. Yes, it's really, really hard, totally fine. That's why your piece is gonna be really hard. But if you go and do, you know, the things that we're supposed to do, make sure things are null, make sure to check if things are null, make sure to free memory, make sure things aren't leaking, you'll be good. You will be set. All right, so we're going to move into this completely new concept of redirection. And so before now, the main way that we've been interacting with our programs is through standard input and standard output, right? We, as the user, input things, and the computer spits it back to us in the terminal. But there are other ways for us to interact with the computer, with our programs, that aren't just me physically typing things in when I'm prompted. And the way we do that is through the greater than caret and the pipe symbol. So we can also read and write two files using that. So the way that we would do this is the greater than caret, all that is doing is writing whatever your file has to a separate file. So for example, if I wanted to run hello world, and I wanted the output to be saved in another file and not just printed out to me, I can just do greater than caret output.txt. So all that's doing is taking my hello.world program and whatever the output is, it's saving in a file called output.txt. So the way that David did the .csv with like names of students, it's the same that you guys can do. And what's especially useful here are the greater than, the two greater than caret signs, which you can append to an output file, which means that you can just add on top of it. You can just like keep adding to output.txt of each additional thing that you're doing. Or if you start getting into more complicated programs, the two greater than caret, that just prints out the error messages. So say you have like a giant amount of error messages and you want to read through all of them and you don't want to have to scroll through your terminal, you can actually just do greater than output.txt and it's going to save all of your errors in a file called output.txt that you can go through and read.
Where is the text file saved?
It's saved in the same directory that your program is. So you just go back and look for it. And the same thing we can do for input is that we can actually take the contents of some file and we can input that into our program. So rather than having to do like command line arguments of where you physically have to type things every single time, you can actually just have a file called input.txt that just puts it all in. And then pipe is especially cool because it can take the output of one program and use it as the input of another program. So for example, in your guys' Visionaire, there was this line of code that you guys were running that you maybe perhaps didn't really know what was doing. This /generate1000 pipe /find42, right? So all that's doing, if we just take a look at this like step by step, the /generate, that means I'm running my program generate that is taking in 1000 at its input. So I want to generate 1000 random numbers. And I'm going to pipe that, or I'm going to use that output as input for my program called find. And I'm going to try to find 42 out of the numbers generated from those 1,000 numbers. does that line of code make sense to everyone else? So in this way, we're like saving ourselves a ton of steps. We don't have to like run generate, like save the file, and then put it into find. We can just do it all in one line. So whatever generate is outputting, plop it right back in to find. Yeah.
And then like terms of like command line arguments, that's three command line arguments. It's generate, find, no, four. Generate 1,000, find, and 42, or is the
So the pipe doesn't really count as a command line argument because the compiler or the terminal knows that pipe. Oh, I know that, oh, I must look before the pipe because that's my output, and I must look after the pipe because that's my input. So it knows that, so the dot slash generate and 1,000, those are two command line arguments just for the first program. And then the dot slash find 42 are two command line arguments for the second program. Yeah. Everyone good on this? Okay, so just real quick, like, what do these three lines of code do? Fairly simple. Anyone want to tell me what the first line does? Think of it as just, what does a greater than caret do?
It like puts something into the next thing.
So what is the opposite of that?
It puts the next thing into the first thing.
Yeah, so all that's doing is you're running a program dot hello, or you're running a program named hello. You're going to give it an input called input.text, right? Because think of it as just physically going into hello. And then you're going to save the output in a file called output.text. How about the second line? I wonder what the second line does. Sorry, say that again. Elliot, okay.
So it puts a list of numbers into find?
Yeah. So find, remember, in order to run find, you need to know where you're searching. And so all that is doing here is that it's giving you a pre-assigned set of numbers. Then find is going to search those for the number of 42. And then 15, remember you guys ran this when you tested your code. Now do you understand what it was doing?
It's putting in the set of instructions to go through a 3x3 to get the, to win the game. So
yeah.
So it inputs those instructions into the program.
So the tilde cs50.pset3/3x3, that all that was doing was that we had created a text file that had all the tiles ready for you guys. And so for your game to play, we just put that into like your program. So we had created this board, and then we're putting that board into your program that ran it and created like a tile of 3x3. That's all it was doing. And so there was actually magic going on behind the scenes that you guys didn't program, that we programmed. But now you guys understand why we did that. So it's all good. All right. So while redirection is like very useful, C has a general mechanism for reading and writing files of its own. Nothing conceptually difficult here, so I'm just going to go through really, really quick. All it is just memorization and making sure you guys are syntactically like using it correctly. The way that we would do that is create a reference to the file, we'd open the file, and then we would do all the reading or writing and then close the file. One thing you guys want to keep in mind is that while doing this, because we are closing and opening files, all of those commands are included in the standard IO library. So make sure whenever you're doing this that you've included, hashtag included, standard IO.h. All right, so real quickly, step one, you want to create a reference to that file. And now that we've done pointers, you guys can tell me what that line of code is doing, right? All it is doing is creating a pointer named file, of type file, because you know that it's going to point to a file, and you're going to open the file. Down here, fopen, all it is open the file. This is the file name, and then there's three things you can do. You can read, write, or append. Most generally, you guys will be reading or writing, because you're either going to be inputting a file or outputting one, so pretty much R and W are the two things you're going to be using most. So in this case, all I've done is create a pointer to a file called file. I'm opening it, and I'm reading, I'm opening this file called file.txt, and I'm reading it. That's all I'm doing at this point. And then these are just functions in which you can like read different things or write different things or like skip to different places where you want to look. All of these are online. All of these you can just Google. No need to like memorize them. They're just there at disposal for your use if you would like to be able to use them. So like, if I wanted to just read in like one character at a time, I would do file, like F get C. Or if I wanted to read in a line of text at a time, I would do F get S. And so on and so forth. All of these just do different things you guys can use. And then lastly, I'm gonna, after I'm done reading or writing, I'm just gonna F close that file. And remember, this is one of those, like, remember, like, please do this, like, or else your file is not going to work. Always open a file before reading and reading. You have to always close it if you open it. Same thing as with memory, right? You have to always take memory and free it. Here, you have to always open a file before trying to read it, and you always have to close it after you open it. Okay, so this is also online. I'm going to challenge you guys to kind of write a program that prints hello.world to a file. It's really simple. It essentially just involves like the few lines of code that were just written previously. You're going to put them together and write that. So some important things to keep in mind while you guys are trying to use this, if this is all like very useful for your PSET this week, is that fopen creates a file pointer. Like, it's not actually the physical file. All it is pointing to the file you want to open. And you're essentially, whenever you're using any of the other functions, like f like read or f write or f get c or f get s, is that you're just passing around this pointer to all of those functions. So you're not actually like taking that file and using it for your functions, you're just taking the pointer and pointing it to those functions so that you can use. And if you forget to close your file after you use it, your program is going to leak memory. Essentially, all that means is that bad things will happen and your program will not function correctly. And so on the PSET in the beginning, I think there's a short where Nate explained like what valgrind was. All valgrind is a way for you to make sure you're not leaking memory. So you guys want to make sure you watch that short because that explains it really well. What happens? Okay, so I went through that really, really quickly because I really want to get to talking about the PSET before you guys leave. Does anyone have questions conceptually? Mostly all of this is just syntax that you can use to like read or write files. Finally, all right, everyone's favorite. We're gonna talk about the PSET now. So show of hands, how many of you guys read the spec this week? Oh, that's like half, that's good. So this is actually like a really, really fun PSET in the sense that like you feel like a detective because you're doing all these really cool things that you didn't know that you could do, but now it's really cool that you can do them. And it's actually a lot simpler than you guys think. The basic halves of this program are you're going to download source code or distribution code written by us, and you're going to have one folder called BMP and another folder called JPG. Within your BMP, you're going to have three programs. One of them is already written for you. So copy.c is a program we have already written for you that you're going to download. All that does is take as input a picture and makes a copy of it as output. That's all that file is doing. But what you want to do for whodunit, so how many of you guys remember in like fifth grade or like maybe you're younger, maybe like third grade when you guys had secret messages and you had to put like a piece of paper over it to decode the message? Yeah? So that's all we're doing, except this time with your computer. So we've given you this lovely image. Doesn't look like anything, but underneath it is a clue that's going to help you with answering the question we ask you. Essentially, what you want to do is input that file, tweak some things around, maybe adjust the colors, shift things, so that whatever the message is can come through. So inside there are hidden pixels of information that if you write your code correctly is going to decode and tell you what this clue is. And so some helpful hints as to how you would go about approaching this. You really want to familiarize yourself with file.io because we're reading from files and writing to files, right? And so whenever we do that, that involves file.io, you're going to have to familiarize yourself with how do you open up pictures files? How do you write to files as pictures? How do you do all of those things? That's going to be really useful. Secondly, how are you going to be able to change the colors to clear up this picture? It's probably going to involve adjusting like your pixels or your RGB values somewhere in there. Essentially, there's no right way of solving this. As long as you can kind of adjust like those pixels to make it look like something that you care about, that's all we care about as well. So there's many ways to do this. Just play around with it until you get something that works. And you would be really surprised at how few lines of code you need to actually do this. I'm talking like 3 lines of code, like total. that you need to write in order to do this. So if you find yourself writing like 40, 30 lines of code, you're probably doing it wrong. All you have to do is kind of like play around with the colors and see how that works out. Okay, so then we head into a bit harder of a problem. Here we have resize, where we're asking you to, we're giving you as input a picture, and you're resizing this image into something larger or something smaller, depending on the dimensions we give you. So remember in lecture that David quickly glanced over how information is detected by your computers to mean it's a type of file. So like a Word file has special characters in front of it that tell your computer it's a Word file. Same thing with a JPEG. In this case, we're going to give you a JPEG file. All we know is that JPEG file is a picture, right? But the computer distinguishes it in very specific ways. So at the beginning of any JPEG file, you're going to have what's called the bitmap info header and the bitmap file header. All those are different pieces of data that tell your computer, hey, listen up, a JPEG's coming up, and these are the dimensions or characteristics of that JPEG. So you guys really want to know what information is stored inside of those headers and what is the size of them. Because when you're running through your program, you're going to want to skip over that amount, right? Because you don't care about modifying the header, you care about modifying what's after it, right? So make sure you guys know how large those things are. Secondly, before you begin trying to resize your image, you're probably going to want to save the dimensions of the original, right? Because if I tell you this picture is 100 pixels by 100 pixels, and I want you to make it 4 times bigger, you know that you have to multiply those dimensions by 4. So then you know you want an output file of 400 by 400 pixels, for example. So it's really useful for you guys to save the dimensions of the original. And then afterwards, after you're done resizing, you can write new headers with those new dimensions after resizing. And the way that you physically can create enlarge pixels is that you can write new RGB, remember RGB, all that stands for is red, green, and blue, pixels to an out file. And you're going to want to, you know, have different amounts of what we call padding. All padding is are spaces before and after pictures that tell your, essentially, that tell your picture, like, how large should it be taking up. This is very abstract for a lot of you if you haven't read the PSET spec, but it's going to be very useful for when you're actually reading through. You're like, oh yeah, like that makes sense. Why do I have to do this? Makes sense. Lastly, this is like probably one of the most frustrating programs ever, just because you can't tell if it's working or not. All this program Recover is doing is that if run properly, it should be able to suddenly recover like 50 images that were lost on our hard drive. And so the problem with this program is that you can't really test it, because either you recovered them or you didn't. And so you kind of just have to play around with it. And if your program's working properly, you'll suddenly see that in your directory, you've got like a giant amount of pictures that are now there. So how I would approach this problem is we're going to give you what's called a card.raw file. Essentially, that's just a corrupted file with all of the pictures stored that you're going to need to recover from. So you're probably going to want to input your card.raw or open your card.raw file, and you're going to want to manipulate it to be able to store JPEGs. So I would start by tracking and storing each individual JPEG as you find, right? Like, you're not going to individually all of a sudden just create all 50 JPEGs. You're going to want to keep track of how many you're opening. And then you want to make sure when you're writing to a buffer, you guys will know what I'm talking about once you read the spec, you want to make sure that you're using an unsigned char buffer. And then you want to ask yourself the question of how many bytes are in a CF, are in a card file. That's how many you're going to want to read into your buffer. You're going to want to make sure the two align, because then you won't have random memory leaking out. You know exactly how many bytes you need and how many bytes that you want to have. And then finally, you want to use a function called sprintf to generate custom file names for every new JPEG that you find. So as you create and find JPEGs in your card, you're going to want to store them and name them, right? And so you're going to want to use that function to create the names that can store all of your JPEGs. And lastly, don't forget to close each JPEG after you're done. Because what you're going to do is you're going to probably have some sort of a loop that iterates through all of your JPEGs. You're going to write a JPEG and rename it as you find it. But after you're done with every single JPEG, you need to close it so you can start over and move on to the next picture. And so something that's really fun that we like to do, because this is such a weird problem set, but also like weirdly satisfying problem set, is that all of the pictures we have for you, if you recover properly, all of the pictures are pictures of your wonderful teaching staff, both at Harvard at here and here at Yale. And if you happen to recover all of these pictures and identify the staff members in those cards and take selfies with us if you find us around campus, for every photo you submit to us, we will give you a gigabyte of Dropbox space. So let's do the math here. If there's 50 pictures and 50 teaching staff members, if you happen to find all 50 of us, that's 50 gigabytes of Dropbox space we will be giving you guys. So some extra added incentive if you guys like didn't just care about recovering lost images. There's also some added incentives. It's a fun problem set, it really is. It's kind of frustrating, but then it becomes really fun when you realize like, wow, it's working. And now I have all of these pictures that I've just created by myself. Okay. Any questions on the PSET? For anyone who's already started, if you have questions, I'll be here for a couple minutes after section if you want to talk to me. Well done, guys. I'm sorry I like information dumped on you guys. Pointers are really, really challenging and frustrating, and I'm really glad that you guys like stayed with me. We'll talk more in depth about them next week as we start doing like hash tables and more functions that involve them. But yeah, so if anyone has any questions, I'll be around. Thanks for coming. And take more candy because there's more candy. So, cool.